Remember to mute yourselves if you're not speaking, and welcome everybody to the September 9th meeting of the University Students Council. Here's the agenda. Please take some time to review it, and then we'll need a motion to adopt it. Would someone like to adopt the agenda? Okay, BP Goswani, thank you. And all those in favor, oh, Councillor Lumberjane, seconder, thank you. All those in favor? Great, and that, anyone opposed? Seeing none, great, that passes. So we'll just do a roll call here. I just need to grab that, sorry. When I call your name, please say your name back to me, your pronouns, and your constituency. It's all the way at the bottom. All right, Tasnim?
Here. President JC speaking. I use she, her pronouns, and I am a College of Arts and Science student.
Great. Abhineet.
Vice President, Operation Finance, Abhineet Goswami, he, him, College of Arts and Science.
Nicole.
Vice President of Student Affairs, Nicole Science, she, her, of College of Engineering.
Takir has sent his regrets, BP of finance, right? Academic affairs, thank you. The many committees, that's right. All right, Kyle.
Councillor Kyle Kurziner from the College of Ag Bio, and I use the pronouns he, him.
Cassidy.
Councillor Cassidy Ross from the College of Ag Bio, present, and I use the pronoun she, her.
Great. Sharon.
Hi, I'm Sharon Jacob. I'm from the College of Arts and Science, and my pronouns are she and her.
Kanika.
Hi, my name is Kanika. I'm from College of Arts and Science, and my pronouns are she, her.
Samuel.
Councillor Samuel Papp, I'm from the College of Arts and Science, and I use he, him pronouns.
Haseeb. Councillor Bhatti. All right, not present. Jesse. Also not present. Hanok.
Councillor Hanok Gabriel. I'm from the College of Engineering and I use the pronouns he, him.
Great. Councillor Singh.
Hi, myself Harmanbir Singh. I am from College of Engineering and I use he, him pronouns.
Great. Councillor Noon.
Hi, I'm Councillor Noon, MSC for the Indigenous Student Union, and I'm from the College of Arts and Science.
Councillor Schachter. Right, absent. Councillor Miglani. Councillor Khan.
Hi, I'm Councillor Khan from the College of Kinesiology. Sorry. My pronouns are she and her.
Okay. Councillor Perot.
Hi, I'm Councillor Perot with the College of Law, and my pronouns are he, him.
Councillor Kim. Kim? Councillor Lumberding.
Councillor Lumberding, I represent the College of Pharmacy and Nutrition, and my pronouns are she and her.
Councillor Bowman.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Bowman. My pronouns are she and her, and I'm from St. Thomas More.
And Councillor Yu.
I'm Councillor Angela Yu. I represent the College of Veterinary Medicine, and my pronouns are she and her.
Great, thank you. And I will invite our guests to introduce themselves, starting with Patty.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Patty McDougall, Vice Provost Teaching, Learning, and Student Experience, and my pronouns are she, her. Thanks for inviting us.
Great, and now, Jay?
Yeah, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. Jay Wilson, and my pronouns are he and him. And I'm the Interim Vice Provost, Teaching, Learning, and Student Experience. And again, very pleased to be invited here and look forward to the discussion and observing the proceedings tonight.
Wade?
Hi, good evening. I'm Wade Epp. I'm the Associate Vice President of Services, pronouns he and him. Thanks for having me.
And Jason?
Hi, everybody. Jason Bendner, USSU Communications Marketing Manager. My pronouns are he, him. Sorry.
Thank you. And I'm the chair, Leah Story Gamble, she, they pronouns. And I'm in the College of Arts and Science studying urban planning. I'll now turn the floor to if our agenda follows, to our pandemic response team.
Thank you. Thank you, Leah. Can you roll those slides, Chair?
Those slides works a little slowly.
Well, again, thank you. Thank you to Tasman for inviting us. And can I start by saying that we are in senior leadership feeling extremely fortunate to have the USSU executive that has been elected this year and to work with such a bright group of people who have hit the ground running, who we spent the summer meeting with on various items and just, you know, watching them take off in terms of the things that they have put forward as part of the election, but also the things that have grown and expanded and developed. So I can't say enough about how pleased we are. The Tasnim and the group asked Wade and I some time ago to come and to talk about, at the time, what we were framing it as sort of the return to campus and the safe return to campus. And I know Wade and I were extremely pleased to do that. I am after almost 9 years in my role, I should have also said, by the way, that I am a member of the College of Arts and Science, faculty member in psychology. At the end of September and the 1st of October, I will transition roles and move into the position of being deputy provost. It's a brand new role in the university, and I'm privileged to take it on. And hence, Jay, my partner in crime, will be stepping into the role as interim vice provost, teaching, learning, and student experience. And I wanted to, if we could just go to the next slide, I just wanted to introduce Jay to council with some fireworks there. And a picture that, I don't know, like it might be circa, it's probably the 90s. I don't know. Jay isn't really aging, so it's hard to detect. But Jay will be hopefully, I know Jay will be working very closely with the USSU exec. And I know he will hope to be invited back to University Students Council at some future point. It's always a highlight during the course of the year to come and visit, regardless of the topic. It's a highlight to come and visit. So if we go to the next slide, thank you. What I thought I would do is start by mapping out, I don't know, like just a little bit of like where we've been, and it's only two slides worth. So don't buckle in quite yet because it's not going to be that bad, but just a little bit of reflection about where we've been. And you've been there with us in different roles, maybe not in your current student leadership role, but in different roles. And so as we've navigated the pandemic, of course, you know, remember March of 2020, when the University of Saskatchewan closed and shut down. We never completely shut down, by the way. We always had people here who had to run the facilities, look after the animals, that kind of thing. So there was always people who were on campus, but we effectively had to shut and lock our doors and go completely remotely. And I suspect that many of you did exactly that alongside and finished your term in a remote environment. And then we all went home essentially and ran the university. I've been running my portfolio from I call it my cloffice, part closet at home, part office, since that time. And but then things started to open up a little bit in May 2020, and the USASCs, we started to return to activities with a focus on core mission. So what we did was we drew back in things that are about research, things that are preparatory around teaching and learning. So we were very focused on what that increased activity looked like. I'm just getting a water delivery. It's the benefit of working at home is you can order things via text and they come up from the kitchen. Then, of course, we started planning. This feels like 10 years ago, by the way. But then we started planning for the fall of 2020. It was a largely remote academic program. And there were some exceptions. And some of you, particularly in and through the health sciences, were really part of those exceptions. We looked across the whole academic program and said, what are the things in the academic program that we cannot achieve unless people are in person? And the obvious ones included the kind of clinical training, some lab experiences. And then if you can go to the next slide, after we got through the fall, we felt a little bit more confident and comfortable and we started building back up again. And in particular, there were a number of things we started doing in arts and science, in drama, in music, geology, anthro, archaeology, that kind of thing. So bits and pieces here and there. And so increased in-person. Lots of restrictions. January, February, we started planning for the transitional term. So round about March, our president, Peter Stoichev, started with announcements about a transitional fall, which is really where we are right now, right? Fall of 2021. And as I said, I don't know if it's true for you, but for me, it feels like it may have been 10 years ago. That's how much time and energy has gone into keeping us going forward. Majority of our classes are in person. So as of true right now, even with some switching back in some instances to remote. And I can tell you that over 80% of our students have at least one in-person class in the fall of 2020. Back in January, February, we made some decisions together with advice from public health about predicting forward where we would be. Some of that was based on hopes and dreams about vaccination status. Some of that was based on the knowing that that we would get to a place where social distancing would not be a requirement, and so we were able to start planning classes in the way that we did and setting down some planning parameters. So you may have detected, depending on the program you're in, that we're not holding in-person classes that are larger than 120, generally, with some exceptions to 150. That was one of the big ones. Tried to spread things out across the schedule so as not to jam up in that 10 to 2 period during the day. That was another of the things that we put in place. So that's kind of navigating the pandemic. We'll go to the next slide and I'll just, we can introduce Jay again. More fireworks for Jay. I thought that this student's council, I'm not sure if some of you are returning into your role as counselor. If you are, thank you very much for again stepping forward to represent your college in the way that you are. But I kind of had a sense that the majority of people around the table would be new and wouldn't necessarily understand, but might wonder, who's been guiding this? Like, who's been calling the shots? Who's been putting these safety protocols in place? How have things been operating? And so my partner, Wade Epp, is here. He and I and about 8 others have served on what we call the Pandemic Response and Recovery Team. Short form, we call it the PRT. Yes, yes, it should be the PRRT, but try to roll that one. Try to roll that one off your tongue and let me know if you don't think it was the right move to just go PRT. So we pulled together a body called the PRT with people like Wade and myself. So I'm there. I'm and soon Jay will be the person who has general oversight over all things teaching, learning, and student experience. And so I can bring that functionally, operationally, very operational to the table. We also worked closely with a group that we call our crisis operations team and had them helping us and problem solving. But all throughout the course of this period of the pandemic, we have had advisory groups, and I threw in some examples that I thought might be important for you to know. So student leaders. I think that over the course of last year, with the previous USSU executive, in the early days of their tenure, so after they were elected in May, we probably met every week. We met every week for a long period of time. Then I think we went to every 2 weeks, and we spent quite a bit of time together. And they also, that group of student leaders and this current group of USSU exec members, are also meeting regularly with the PRT, with the president's executive, giving advice. Also the GSA is there, the graduate students, but we had a good access to student leaders in order to seek that advice. I know I came also to University Students Council last year and talked things over as well. Deans and associate deans, other senior leaders have been critical, have been helping faculty members and faculty leaders. Jay has just recently vacated his positions chair of our university council, and we were meeting regularly with chairs of the council committees and external stakeholders as well. So Indigenous community is a big one. Other institutions, you know, that we're involved with, lots of examples there. Those are just some of them that I thought might be interesting to you to hear. So we're doing all this planning. We're sharing documents. We're trying to find our way through. As somebody has said many times, there was no playbook. And so we had to make up the governance, the structures, the decision-making as we went. And PRT as a body makes recommendations. And so when it comes to some of the big decisions, so will we, last Christmas is a good example, will we try to shut the university down a few days early so that people have more time? Will we start the term later? Those decisions are going as recommendations to the president and the president's executive team for consideration and decision. So that's kind of the basics of, if you ever hear the language of PRT, that's what that's about. We are chaired, by the way, by a colleague by the name of Darcy Marciniak. He's he is himself a physician. We actually have two physicians on the PRT. Darcy's a respirologist. It's been particularly helpful. He's also a really good guy and funny and makes us laugh. When things are looking dark and bleak, makes us laugh. So we'll go on to the next slide. And I'm going to pass to my partner there, Wade.
Yeah, thanks, Patty. So as outlined on the slide, you'll see some of our core approach to how we've tackled the various and numerous and daily and hourly issues that have come up. But one of our key grounding principles, and I think it was actually Peter Stoichev that raised it, and it was that principle of not contributing to the pandemic by the decisions that we make. So not furthering the pandemic. And I think in the early days, we very much hoped and perhaps even thought that maybe we won't have COVID on our campus, and that quickly changed. And it, you know, it's sort of an inevitable piece based on what's going around us, but have made a number of decisions using this principle that really in some cases allowed us to lead within the province, in some places the country, with our actions. I think early on with our masking protocol was weeks, if not months, ahead of the city and the province. The work that we're doing to ensure that what activities happened or are happening on campus are in a very measured and balanced approach, so that we're not contributing to the pandemic. Through the planning process, our goal for the fall transition was for those that were going to be involved in university activity to really ensure that they were healthy and safe. And that again was a core piece that grounded us in our decision making. And in order to do that, despite, you know, perhaps what was happening in the province with you know, openings and removal of some of the restrictions, we knew that we really needed to take a staged and measured approach, one in where we could begin to see increases in activity, but do it in a way that we could evaluate and measure what the impact was, so that we could hold true to that that principle of not contributing further to the pandemic. So that's, I think, what you've seen and what you will be seeing as we start to roll out various initiatives to, again, re-engage and reactivate on campus, but to do it in a very sort of measured approach to keep that virtue or that principle central to what we're doing. Did I miss anything there, Patty? So some of the things that we thought we'd highlight are the sort of the hot topics or what's flying around in our airspace right now with different things on campus. I think really, you know, to highlight that we are in the midst of the fourth wave. We're seeing some numbers within cases, I think lower today, but still a high 200s, 400s in the last couple of days. Case numbers that are reflective of where we were in January and February, predominantly driven by the Delta variant. I think that's sort of a global trend as it stands. And really seeing those positive cases resulting in hospitalization rates, including numbers in our ICUs that were you know, in our January and February timeframe. So it's by no means an easy situation to be in. I'm preparing a presentation on the post-COVID workforce, and I'm thinking, man, I would have thought we're into right into the midst, still in the midst of COVID and not in that post-pandemic piece.
I'll go vaccinate or test. And so, you know, what we put on this slide were things that we are grappling with, and so, you know, they're hot topics, and we kind of thought they might be hot topics for you as well, and might be the source of questions that you have. Of course, I did circulate the link to the website that has all the core information. So as we watched and tracked the country and other universities in the country, we were carefully scrutinizing what was going on in the springtime. And into May and June, the university was using the language of expect, you know, we expect that everyone will be vaccinated. We knew that vaccination was going to be a key, and masking, but that vaccination was going to be a key to our success and our minimization or lowering risk and disruption in the fall. But as we watched those around us, particularly in Ontario, we concurrently were watching the increase in cases and the modeling. So we've got access to our own modelers in computer science. Some of our people have been modeling for the federal government as well as the province. We could see that we needed to step it up and step up our game. So The approach that the University of Saskatchewan has taken is a vaccinator test strategy. And so you will know that we were required to go into the system and declare whether or not you were fully vaccinated, partially vaccinated, not vaccinated, or whether you prefer not to disclose that information. And if you were not vaccinated or prefer not to disclose that information, then you would be engaged in a twice weekly point of care testing strategy that starts next week, but the tests and instructions and training comes out tomorrow. It becomes available tomorrow. So that has been a really interesting process. I'm pleased that we adopted a strategy that acknowledged that there are those who will choose not to vaccinate by incorporating a testing element as an alternative. There are other strategies that have come up around us. So the University of Calgary is a good example. Their strategy is that everyone tests, and if you wish, you can seek an exemption from the testing by providing evidence that you have been doubly vaccinated. So it's just a flip around. And then there's a couple of schools in the country where vaccination has been mandated for all. You can always trust that whenever vaccination is mandated, there must be provision for accommodations for human rights grounds. And that is also the case for us. And so Wade can talk a little bit more about that in the elevated risk activities.
Yeah, thanks, Patty. And highlighted in that third bullet is you know, in consideration of our vaccination or test strategy, we also looked at activities where we knew by virtue of what was going on that there was a higher potential and consequence for an infection and outbreak. So highlighted there is we did differentiate a couple of areas and further review of some others, specifically with Husky Athletics and residents to start, where we actually mandated that to live in residence or play on a Husky team would be mandated to be vaccinated. And as Patty said, subject to obviously an accommodation process, but a mandate there. So again, working through that in the last couple of days for people to provide that information, working with athletes or students who are staying in our residence to understand both how to attest to their vaccination, but also providing resources if there was a need to seek accommodation. Some of the other academic areas we're looking at or have looked at, pardon me, are where, you know, obviously in a clinical setting, some areas where similar to Husky event athletes, there's you know, group settings like music or drama. So working with academic leaders to understand that and where that mandate is required. Yeah, and then certainly another portion is in that next bullet is what safety measures are we taking within our facilities and for our occupants to ensure that we're mitigating and again not contributing to the pandemic. You know, you'll have, if you've been on campus, you'll no doubt see all of the signage where we do require masking within our facilities. That goes for everyone. I'm in my office right now, but in a single office, if I leave to go grab something from the printer, masks on and away we go. Our custodial staff have concentrated on public areas, classrooms, and areas with high touch surfaces. So we've increased our cleaning measures, installed hand sanitizer and wipe stations, as well as in classrooms, the ability to clean some of those or spray down some of that area. Within our buildings where possible, specifically with our mechanical systems, we've looked at ensuring that we're optimizing our air exchange rates, as well as doing regular but more intensive preventative maintenance on things like filter changes and filter fit, to make sure that where we can provide circulation, we're doing it in a safe way possible.
So I thought that certainly for me and for Jay, for the deans, for the associate deans and colleges, one of the hot topics right now is about delivery mode. And so it was very important for us to, and you might remember getting messages in through the spring about, you know, keep checking the registration system. It will guide you in terms of knowing what's being offered in person, what's being offered remote. We had some changes take place, I think, really purely on the basis of safety concerns through July and August, a handful in the first week of classes. But that is to say, moving from in-person delivery to remote delivery. And I have created a guiding document for deans and associate deans, and made the request that those kinds of decisions be made in consultation with the department head and the associate dean or dean, so that every consideration is given to how that works, and every consideration is given to notifying students. Tasnim was just writing to me just recently about the incident that made it into the paper, where a student did not know and was not informed and came with a set of expectations that did not end up to be true. And of course, I can guarantee you that that does not make me happy. And but nor do I think that any of our faculty colleagues are purposely trying to mislead or misdirect. And I think by and large, I have a good deal of faith in the communication that would happen from faculty to students, particularly now that we're rolling, and there is an ongoing relationship and discussions going on. But that's certainly one of the hot topics. As mentioned, the majority of our classes are still being delivered in person, but we've seen some shifting, and I think it's something that it's hard not to be faced with this fourth wave and the Delta variant and not understand that it is quite anxiety provoking for a number of people right now, and to be looking at these things reasonably and rationally. I was going to speak to, or I will, Leah, speak to compliance, and then we can speak to looking ahead. But I wonder if maybe we could stop sharing the slides, mostly because I realize that when we're sharing the slides, I can't see anybody else, and I really miss seeing other people's faces, those that have their cameras on. So I'll say a little bit about compliance or adherence, and there's sort of, in my mind, different zones or areas to cover. So we have compliance with regard to making a declaration around your vaccine status. And again, fully vaccinated, partially vaccinated, not vaccinated, or prefer not to say. Those options are all there for people to choose. So we're quite serious about the requirement to complete that for everyone. So it's not that we're serious about this for students and not for faculty and staff. We're in fact consistently serious. And things have gone, I would say, generally quite well with that system and the upload of documents that are all being verified that people put in. You will hear as we get into next week, we will have a vast majority of people who have gone in and done exactly what was asked of them. And we will have to then start to make contact with those individuals who have not gone in and made those declarations. So there's compliance with that declaration system. There's compliance with the testing. So if you're someone who has declared that they're not vaccinated or that they're prefer not to disclose that vaccination status, or even if if you're a student who is awaiting a second dose, right? You're required to test twice a week and upload the results of that test. And we're actually entirely serious about tracking that process as well. And so when somebody does not, in a very short window, reasonable but short window, upload those results, test results, we will be pursuing that. Masking is another area. So as you know, 3-ply single-use masks are required on campus. I think the masking generally has been going quite well. Jason, Stephanie, others in the USSU have been working on that. Across campus, we've been working on that, gentle reminders. It's been encouraging. We've created and adopted what we call the 4-hour approach. You may have seen this posted in classes, talked about in your classes. You know, if somebody's not masking in class, they're going to be reminded. There'll be a request to put on a mask. And if one or more individuals refuse to mask, the faculty member will be leaving the room and dismissing others as well in the class. And then the faculty member will be reporting. We can't have faculty members leaving the room on an ongoing basis. And so we will intervene immediately to ensure that that doesn't happen again. For the vast majority of people, you know, who are masked in the class. So we will be getting onto that right away. So there's compliance of different kinds. And, you know, we're going into a zone that I could not have predicted. If necessary, we will be suspending students. I don't say that lightly to you. Like in my almost 9 years in this role, I can still count on two hands how many times we've ever used the president's authority. The president has authority under the University of Saskatchewan Act to suspend students, but we will be moving in that direction. And that's just how committed we are to the safety of everyone on this campus and to the steps that we've put in place. So that's a little bit on compliance, and I know it's an extremely serious topic, and it's nice to be able to see some faces when we talk about that. And Leah, I think we just had one more thing, but did you want to come in first?
I just had a question about compliance. What if someone is on campus and symptomatic? What are faculty and students expected to do if they suspect someone is symptomatic?
So if you were in a class and had concerns about that, I would be talking to the prof. We do have a reporting system in place for instances where there is a positive or suspected positive case that triggers a series of actions. So yes, I mean, I think you could do that. You will all know from you know, the materials, the things, the messaging coming out. We are asking everyone to stay home when they're unwell. Stay home when you have the sniffles. Just you know, keep it from everybody else. Keep that risk away from everybody else. So thanks, Leah. That last item that we wanted to talk about that's a hot topic is really January and questions about, well, you know, Jason's smiling, like, what is January going to look like? And would Wade or I or Jay have a crystal ball? We'd be in good shape right now. I am maintaining optimism. That's what I do. That's who I am. I'm maintaining some optimism around both increase in vaccination rates, which is our ticket out of this, as well as being able to wrestle down you know, the variant that we're facing. So, you know, I can tell you that as of right now, the way we have the academic program set up for January, we were looking like almost a sort of a complete return to in-person activity, with the exception that is important for you to hear, with the exception that during the pandemic, some of the good things that have emerged, some of the silver linings, is the recognition that certain classes are well suited to an online environment. Certain groups of students are looking for continued study in that online way. And so, you know, there's some conversion going on. So so good learning, good changes, but certainly in January, the plan is to move out of that transitional period. And, you know, I'm wanting to hear what Wade and Jay think about that as well, but I'll remain optimistic, and it's what will help me jump out of bed in the morning and get things done.
I'm still laughing at hot and January being used in the same sentence, Patty. So not sure about that, but yeah, I too am optimistic. I think there's some good things coming on the horizon. And I think about, you know, I have two children, 12 or 11 and 8, who hopefully in the coming months will be able to be vaccinated and start to really narrow those vectors of where this is spreading. And I always think about, Patty mentioned Preston Smith, the Dean of Medicine, and talking about future waves, and those waves get smaller as the right things happen. And I'm hopeful and optimistic for that. You know, from a services perspective, an operational perspective, you know, it's good to see people back on campus. I look forward to what January will bring on that front. And certainly within our, you know, our residents and our culinary centers, thinking about how we can start to roll out some of our new ideas and programs to best serve students and to create a very meaningful on-campus experience. Thanks, Patty.
Thank you, Wade. And Jay, I don't know if you want to share some final thoughts about what January might look like in your crystal ball, and then we could open up for questions.
Yeah, I think I've been planning for this upcoming January since last January. And last year I was actually the head of three departments. So I was looking after a really diverse set of needs, both at the graduate and undergraduate level. So we are hoping that this January, and we're planning for it to be this miracle term, right? Where everybody was vaccinated and healthy and safe, and then we would kind of have more realistic expectations after that. But to your question, Leah, about what happens now, like, you know, what happens when somebody in your class tests positive? Well, I was coming back from Regina on the weekend and got an email about the first positive case in a class in the College of Education. And the instructor reached out to me and the associate dean. And I was so pleased to see the team recognize it, not sit on their hands or anything, but really put a plan that has been created in theory in place. And to see it work really well. And actually, I am paying attention to the meeting, but I'm also keeping an eye on that particular faculty member. And we were texting a bit tonight, you know, to make sure that things are okay. And what we're doing is we're being flexible with the best interests of the students in mind. And I think that is, you know, what we are looking forward to in January as well. The idea is being prepared, having plans in place, being able to respond to those needs, and hope that the broader community does work towards a higher level of vaccination or other safety options that they can take, depending on their particular situations. But we're working together, and the importance is the communication that happens at these events, with your instructors, between student groups, between instructors. All of those things we're learning from each other, and it's gonna make us better. Because we're going to have something like this again in the future. And I think it's really demonstrated the processes that we can put into place to react and be responsive to needs. Thanks for a chance to share some thoughts.
Yeah, and Jay, you reminded me that colleagues around the table might appreciate hearing that likely into next week, we'll start to create a web page that'll be updated daily. And In some ways, like I think a little bit about it, like as an airline model. And what I mean by that is, you might remember during the height of the pandemic, you'd see messaging in the paper or somewhere about flights and positive cases. And we'll do something similar around areas, regions of the university where there have been positive cases. And we'll do that because we've been transparent the whole time. And unfortunately, the province, the health authority has stopped contact tracing. And I wish that weren't the case, and you know, hold out some hope that they might start that up again. We're not in a position to take that over to do that contact tracing. We will do as exactly as Jay described and do our best in situations, and we will make information transparent so that people can feel safe about as they move around campus. So questions, love to hear your questions. I've had chocolate, I've got Diet Coke. I'm fully ready. I'm all juiced up.
Councillor Kurzinger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first and foremost, I'd like to say thank you to the three of you for taking the time to come and speak with us today. It's, I think, very important to hear from you guys, all the hard work you've been doing. And it's a great update for us to each take back to our respective colleges and cohorts. That being said, it's a difficult question to ask because it's hard because we're all so hopeful. Like you said, that January semester, that winter semester, a lot of us look at it as the light at the end of the tunnel, right? It's like if we got through summer, we got through a year of online, now it's one more semester, right? And then hopefully we're back in person. Do you guys have a metric or a measurement point that you are striving for specifically that will determine what is going to bring us back into a typical class? Or is that just going to be up to interpretation from you guys as a group, come just looking at, I guess, climate and situation of Saskatchewan and Canada as a whole with regards to the pandemic and new case levels, new variants and vaccination rates?
So I'll start, and thank you for that. You froze just to the tail end, but I think we got the whole thing. But you froze in midpoint, which was kind of, it's always fun on these calls to see people in different positions. I wanted to mention, thank you, by the way, for the kind comments about the hard work and your comments about your colleges. And I wanted to make sure to say, I have seen an extraordinary amount of work from the deans and associate deans and faculty members and staff in all of those colleges. Unbelievable, above and beyond consistently for the last 18 months. And so it's noteworthy for sure. So right now we have an academic plan going for January. It is in the system, as it were. Students are registered in classes, and so our intention will be to move forward with that. As I said, it's a near full return to in-person delivery, with the exception of some things that will be permanently offered both in remote and in person, or more appropriately offered in a continued fashion online. I think the way we approach it, Counselor, is we look at the context in the situation and ask ourselves, do we have to back up or can we continue advancing forward? And I think you hit some of the highlights of what we look at. So we are looking at cases for sure, but we know from the science that even those who are vaccinated will still contract and transmit COVID. And so that alone is no longer the sole indicator. So vaccination rates. One of the things, by the way, that prompted our move in August towards vaccinate or test was the knowledge that only it's probably changed now. It's probably creeping towards 60, but only 50% of those in the 18 to 29 year old age range had been doubly vaccinated. So the bulk of our 20 some thousand students is in that age range. So vaccination rates we're looking at and tracking, case counts, yes. Also very careful and concerned about hospitalization and ICU. And it goes back to that principle that Wade showed you about not contributing to the pandemic. And so being mindful of that. People always ask, and it's exactly the right question, what's plan B? What does that look like? And in simplest form, What you would see happening is that we could back off of some of the elective kinds of things that are happening in person and protect the core of the program delivery. So we could try to minimize risk in the activities around campus and see what kinds of difference we can make by backing off of some of those non-essentials or extracurriculars or add-ons that we have before we fully pull back from the academic program as it's set. Wade, I don't know if you would add something to that.
Yeah, well, I can try, Patty, and you know, we're just at a very interesting time, and I think a lot about what is reported in the in the media right now that this is really, you know, the hospitalizations predominantly are of the unvaccinated. And I think, you know, in the coming, in the next short while, we'll really know what the lay of the land is for our campus. And I think as we reach some of the vaccination that causes people to perhaps they contract COVID, but they're not overly sick, you know, you start to be able to say, well, this then becomes more of a business as usual type scenario. And I think that's something that will be interesting to see and to evaluate and monitor as we move towards January. And yeah, it seems, and I'm glad you see it as the light at the end of the tunnel. I think that's a goal that we all need to have and then work collectively together to make that happen. I should note yesterday, Patty, that we had a Dean's Council meeting, and certainly your dean raised the impact that you all are having in helping to inform and communicate and promote certain activities that will ultimately get us to I don't want to use the return. I don't think anything will ever be quite the same, but into a business where, as you described it, where we're seeing more of a normalized campus.
If you don't mind me jumping in right here again to add to that, when you say to promote activities and communicate that to the student body, I guess to further this conversation in brief, when we are asked as counselors and representatives from our respective student bodies in each of our colleges, what is going to allow us to enhance, not to say the word return, our on-campus experience in January, if you were to be able to knock it down to a couple variables, the key variables that you guys are going to be examining come the end of fall semester, what are those things going to be so that we could go back and say to our student body, well, our team is going to be looking at vaccination rates, hospitalizations, stuff like that. What are those really key basic things that we can take back?
Yeah. Such clever. I would say if you could do anything and use your influence in any way, I would say get vaccinated. That's what I would say. Get vaccinated. Someone coined the phrase recently in somewhere where I was about living with COVID. That's really where we're headed, right? Living with COVID. So yeah, this is not going away. So get vaccinated and let them know that vaccinations available at the Student Wellness Center, vaccinations available at the pharmacy. We will bend over backwards and keep vaccinating for as long as we can get supply, because I think it's a cornerstone. And to get us through fall, the second one for me would be, please keep masking, because it makes a difference. And the science tells us it makes a difference.
Councillor Bauman?
I believe I put up my hand second.
Like after Councillor Perreault?
Yeah, sorry.
I practice gender equity at the microphone, so you can go ahead. Should have made that clear in the first meeting. For those of you who don't know what that means, I tend to bounce between she, her pronoun users or they, them pronoun users and he, him pronoun users. So cis men and non-cis men. So go ahead, Elizabeth.
Okay, thank you, Chair. And yeah, I guess I'd like to repeat what Kyle said and just thanking Patty and Wade and Jay and all of you for coming and talking. This really informative. I guess something, a concern I'd like to bring up that I've been noticing among students and that's been talked about are the guidelines to stay home if we're ill, which is great. I think that's a wonderful idea. The concern arises when it's even little things like sniffles or just general feelings of unwellness and not being able to access course materials when we're staying at home. And at least among the professors that I've talked to or that my friends have talked to, professors are not equipped to record classes or provide content to students. And unfortunately, this ends up with a response among students. I've seen two different responses, either like demotivation for working, because if I get a cold anyway and I miss a week or two of class, then that sets me back. And so then there's this discouragement for academics, which is sad. And then the second response I've seen is trying to hide symptoms because I can't get class notes. My professor can't record. I have a bit of a cold, but it's like not obvious. So I'm just going to go to class anyway. And that's much more concerning. So what do I do? How can we talk to our friends? How can we talk to our constituencies about this when our professors aren't able to provide recordings for people who have to stay home for good reason?
Great, great questions, as I hoped and knew when we came tonight. I'll say a couple of things and then I'm gonna see if Jay wants to jump in as well. One of the things that we did getting started, and we actually put it out in the springtime, was we took advantage of the fact that there had been a year of almost entire remote, and so faculty colleagues who hadn't otherwise or didn't think that they knew how to work with and through Canvas all of a sudden were able to learn that. And we had thousands of people, get instruction on how to use Canvas, et cetera. It was amazing. And so we started to put down some sort of breadcrumbs around how can you be ready, more ready for instances where a student might be sick, or where you as a faculty member might get sick, or a family member, or a group of students in the class might get sick. And so we made that available with some very straightforward, simple suggestions. And one of the things that we've been noticing in the Gwenamaw Center for Teaching and Learning, which is inside that TLSE portfolio, is there has been, even in the last week, a sort of a surge from faculty colleagues coming forward saying, I'd like to get some help to set these things up, right? I'd like to get some help. And I think that's a recognition that's a smart move for this fall to be able to be better positioned to post notes or capture lectures and put those up there. It's not perfect in any way, shape, or form, but it's the approach that we've taken is to make it easier for those who are less comfortable with that, so that they would be prepared to do that. The other thing that always strikes me, Councillor Bauman, is I think to myself, what did we do before? Like, because we got sick, you know, we got sick with the flu. Some of us got sick for longer periods of time. So the getting sick and the needing to be away isn't brand new. So in part, I go back to thinking about how did we navigate that? How did we navigate that before? Jay, I don't know if you have other things.
Yeah. No, I think these are wonderful, wonderful questions. I look forward to working with this group. I was just back channeling to Councillor Kersinger about his questions and the opportunity to do this. And I appreciate your question as well, Councillor Bowen. In the past, I think, you know, if you were sick or, you know, you were sick and didn't make it to class, right? You relied on your classmates and maybe weren't as forward with your instructor. And I think what that means is that we have students that are more invested in their learning and more interested in not falling behind and staying engaged. And that comes in concert with trying to promote more inclusive, engaged learning opportunities. So rather than, I slept in, can I get your notes, right? And maybe that's, Patty, to your point, what people used to do. Now it's, I miss the interactive discussion and the opportunity to do small group work. And so you as students are like, well, how do we replicate that? It's pretty hard to replicate that. And I think that there are many options, and this is where the people who have taken the lead and been really innovative, they kind of set the bar a little higher for the rest, which in turn raises your expectations even more. But I think it's certainly something that we have to come together with. We have to encourage people to be innovative in their teaching, but we also have to have a plan for students who are sick or absent, or you know, get an opportunity to present at a conference because they're a first year researcher. Like there are all kinds of really good reasons why people aren't in class. And I think we have to balance that with people who are terrified of recording themselves and doing lecture capture, or don't want to look like a fool because they're supposedly a bioethicist and they can't figure out how to turn the microphone on and those kinds of things. So I think, you know, if we are aware of that as students, and a little more forgiving and have expectations of not replicating the entire engaging process, but certainly get the content you need and communicating to instructors, you know, us as leaders communicating to instructors that we want you to keep trying, do your best, we'll support you, and hopefully find a way that down the road we can have a system that gets us close to being there without being there, but also being really realistic. And again, it stems from students like this body who are really interested in learning and taking the most away from their educational experiences. And that just gives me great confidence in where we're headed, but it's not a perfect system yet.
Councillor Perreault.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First off, I'd like to echo what's already been said about the work that you've been doing. It doesn't go unappreciated. We're very thankful that we have such a dedicated team in charge of this particular portfolio. My question concerns a very small particular part of some of the regulations that it was mentioned on the first day of in-person classes, and it's generated a surprising amount of chatter, I guess, within the college that I represent. Within the eating and drinking regulations, there is a provision stating that there is no eating or drinking except for water permitted in meeting rooms or classrooms. And I know some students are confused as to why the only water rule. They're not sure if there's some sort of, I don't know, causational connection between non-water beverages and increased transmission, or if this is simply a measure to cut down on essentially non-essential eating and drinking. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on what
the... Got it. Yeah. So that I own that one, Councillor Perreault. I own that one, although it came from a faculty colleague who raised the concern that and you know, it's interesting because there is some evidence of people misusing the masking policy. I was hearing an interesting story, by the way, about somebody on WestJet who was flouting the masking policy and kept saying, oh, I'm drinking my coffee, even though they weren't really drinking their coffee. Anyway, apparently now on WestJet, you get a letter handed to you from the pilot to the attendant to you that says, you will not be welcome on a WestJet flight for the next year. So that was an interesting approach. But yes, the idea is to keep people masked in the classroom. And so that was why the no food or beverages, because we felt that it would create challenges in that regard. And there are areas around the university where food and beverages are welcome and where people are welcome to remove masks in order to consume those food and beverages. And then I think in my mind, the concept of saying to people, you know, no water, no bread, no, you know, it just seemed a little bit over the top, and there, you know, people need to be hydrated, and that was where the exception came around water, to ensure that we weren't creating a different kind of a lack of safety by prohibiting all fluids, all liquids. So it's as simple as that.
Councillor Ross.
Hello, just quickly, I want to reiterate what everybody else has been saying, but thank you guys so much for your time and effort. I'm sure like so much pressure has been put on you guys, and I really appreciate how the university has approached COVID in the last year or so. My question is regarding these tests. Where can these rapid tests be found for students who are seeking these, who are not vaccinated but want to do their part to stay on campus and be getting these tests? And not only that, but will they be available to those who are vaccinated? We do know that the Delta variant is affecting those who are vaccinated, and will there be a fee? Those are my three questions.
Thank you, Councillor Ross. I kid you not that probably even maybe while we're on this call or while you continue on in your meeting tonight, there'll be a message coming out to you that provides the, actually, let me reframe that. There'll be a message coming out to those who are required to test. So we won't be blasting it out to everyone because the vast majority of our students have declared themselves and have declared themselves to be vaccinated. And so, but there will be a message that goes out within the next half hour or so that directs those who are now required to test because they check no or they check prefer not to say, or they're still in that zone of awaiting a second dose, that tells them the locations for pickup. So there's several locations on campus where people can go and collect their kits to take home. There is written instructions and I must say, very pleased, fabulous training video, short training video that's available that our one of our peer health mentors has done together with our manager of the Student Wellness Center. We are looking, Councillor Ross, at, so that's for those people who are required to test. At this time, there will be no charge for those tests. They will pick them up and be on their way and upload the findings for those tests. And a negative result will simply be a negative result. It'll be verified, but a positive result will prompt attention for that individual to call 811 to get a PCR test. We are looking at whether or not we will begin to charge for those test kits as the fall goes on. The other part of your question is about those who are vaccinated. We are also looking at whether we can procure enough supply that we would be able to offer for sale these same take-home kits for somebody who, because we've had other requests, so I'm really glad you brought it up. For someone who's concerned potentially about having been exposed to a positive case or something like that, or someone who's concerned because they have littles at home who aren't vaccinated like Wade. So stay tuned. We will prioritize our folks who are required to test twice weekly. But if possible, if we can procure enough, we'll be looking at making them available for others.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
So just before we go, Chair, I'm not sure. I've been a lot. Oh, there are other questions. I'll wait. I apologize. I thought we were winding down.
Councillor Kurzinger.
Sorry to cut you off there with another question, but a bit of a difficult one for me to table here, but when you say that we should go ahead and our biggest thing going forward is to promote vaccination rates, there are some people who can't or will not get vaccinated. And I understand that that is their personal decision. And being here, I'm here to represent my entire student body as a whole. And I do have to set my personal beliefs aside for a moment. So how are we expected to go back and have to say that that is what we want to do and that's what we have to promote and ask that of people when they are given the personal freedom and choice to do or not to do that?
So great framing of the question. So first of all, there's a very, very small minority of people who cannot be vaccinated. For medical reasons, it's a small minority. And then there's an even smaller group of people who would articulate that a vaccination is counter to their religious beliefs. So setting those folks aside who cannot, then we have a group who will not. And, you know, counselor, I guess I would say that I know you're in an elected position, and I really respect how you just said, I'm here to represent all of my constituents. I would argue back maybe, or suggest back that, you know, our elected officials, provincial, our medical health officer, our federal, you know, our federal folks, they are also recognizing the science behind this. And so I guess I would say, you can respect a person's personal beliefs, while at the same time advocating for the evidence that is behind. And so perhaps it is in the way in which you express that. But the very good question you asked to us is, what can we do to get closer to that light? And I see it as a light as well. And the single most important thing we can do to get closer to that light is vaccinate. There's just no question in my mind. And there's no question in the minds of the medical health officers in the province of Saskatchewan and the federal at the federal level as well and around the world.
Thank you very much for your response. I'm sorry, I do not recall the proper way to address you other than Ms. McDougall. So thank you so much,
Patty is the proper way, and thank you for saying Miss, because when someone says Mrs. McDougall, I look around to see where my mom might be hiding and lurking. So yeah, Patty is perfect.
My mom's a teacher, and she always enjoyed that you could say Mr. without knowing a person's background in their life. So she always went by Ms. Mm-hmm. So I always try to address anyone by Ms. unless they tell me to do so otherwise, as I believe it to be the most considerate just myself.
It is very gracious.
On the PRT, Patty makes us call her Commander McDougall. So that would be apropos in this setting too.
All right, Councillor Schechter.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. So this session was really very informative for me and all the coordinators in the residence. So I live in the residence. They are working really hard to make all the residents feel at home, and also the international students. So I have one question regarding the quarantine procedures. So I have met a few students who have just arrived like a few days ago and quarantining, and like their mental health is not that great. So it's like, I'm just wondering if there is any facility or opportunity to just like call them, how you're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So thank you for being so caring. There's two thoughts that come immediately to my mind that you could suggest. Number one would be for them to be in contact with our colleagues at ISAC, International Student and Study Abroad Center. We do, for our students who are quarantining on campus or who are quarantining at the Parktown or who are quarantining across the street, we have made provisions to do check-ins, etc. But some people are quarantining on their own off campus. So I would say ISAC, and you just need to Google them on the website. And the other thing is that our Student Wellness Center has like counselors available. And those services have been the primary healthcare part of it has been in person at least partially since May of 2020, but they've also been able to deliver that care virtually as well. And so I can, if you pop your email into the chat, I can send you those all of that contact information, and then you can pass it along, and they'll at least feel like they have somewhere where they can reach out to get some support during this period of feeling isolated while quarantining.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right. Any other questions?
Can I do my wind down?
I actually have one last question. Are you guys considering masks for January?
Oh, chair. The chair is on their game today. We haven't talked a lot about it. We have not honestly talked a lot about it. But to the great points that have been raised this evening, if things are looking the least bit sketchy for our success in January, in other words, we will go with masks in order to be able to do more together, if that's the case. If it's, you know, if the, you know, the, frankly, I wish the province was still masking. We might be in a different position if we were doing that more prolifically, but so we will lean towards continued masking if it means we can stay together on campus. I don't know, Wade, what you might add.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm chuckling about, have we thought of it in January? And it's just, where we are today is just a very different scene. But I think what we would start to see in that January timeframe is if we're headed that way, we're stepping down on some of our other restrictions. And then I think likely masking would then be one of those last things that is to go. And you could even differentiate that where perhaps you have masking zones or something, but you know, we need to be heading in the right direction to get there. And you know, where we are today is a bit far from it.
All right, I think you can wind down now.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to make the comment that I am struck by the, not only the grace of this group and how you have been so kind in thanking us and taking the time to do that. That means a lot, really it does. And we're gonna take that back to the PRT and express to them what our time was like with you. But I also want to comment on the quality of the kinds of questions that you're coming forward with. And I couple that together with the quality of the leadership that you have on the USSU executive. And I just wanna note for you that this could be the year for this group to get together and to do amazing things. And please don't let the fact that we're in fourth wave, or don't let anything stop you from doing those things together and achieving great things. I hope you will have Jay back. I probably see less of me in my different role, but thank you for having us tonight and for all that you've offered to us that we can take back and share with our colleagues.
Great, thank you so much. I will share our screen again. And we will move on to our land acknowledgement. As a council of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students, we acknowledge that we are gathered on Treaty 6 territory, the homelands of the Cree, Soto, Dakota, Sioux, Lakota, and Métis people. We acknowledge the harm that colonial institutions such as the University of Saskatchewan have done. We remember that there were centuries of governance and education on this land before settlers arrived. We acknowledge that those forms of governance and education are still continuing today. My phone just died. One second. We honor and affirm our relationships with one another and the land that we are on, as we work together to dismantle the systemic barriers to education that First Nations, Métis, and Inuit people face, as well as other marginalized people also face. Say, all right. We'll move on to our reports that were included in your bundles and say goodbye to our guests if they choose to leave, but they're also welcome to stay, of course.
I'm going to take you up on your offer, but thanks, everyone. I look forward to seeing you all in action and meeting with this group again throughout the year. Let's go into the light together.
Room for a joke in there. Don't go.
No. I didn't mean it like that. But stay with us.
All right. Can I have a motion for USC? That is the minutes from the last meeting. Great, Councillor Pro. Seconded by Councillor Papp. All those in favor? Thank you. Any opposed? Let's start a new rule for anyone opposed that they speak up in just general motions like this on stuff that's not controversial. How's that sound? Like reports and minutes and agendas. If you're opposed to it, speak up. All right, mover for the executive committee. Councillor Bauman. Seconder, Councillor Lumberding. All those in favor of the report. Oh, sorry. The executive can only be moved by people on the executive. Oh, I forgot about that. Nicole, thank you. Taz, thank you. Mover for Nicole, seconder for Taz. All those in favor of that report. All right, thank you. Does anyone have anything to report from their colleges? All right, seeing none. There was no motions arising from the minutes and reports. So we'll move on to our business, and I'll turn it off to our lovely president to explain the appointments committee.
Awesome. Thank you, Leah. So for appointments committee, we will be doing the nomination process for this committee. I will be just giving an overview of what the appointments committee does. So the committee is composed of me as the chair, and all the VPs sit on this committee as non-voting members. There will also be 4 spots available on this committee from councillors. And essentially what the appointments committee does is go through the student at large applications and figure out which students will be selected for all of our other committees. I do want to make note, this is a very low key light committee to be involved in. Likely we will probably be only meeting in September, like one or so meetings. And if there's any ad hoc committees down the road, but again, it's very not heavy duty in terms of the work that will be required for us to do. So that is the appointments committee, and yeah, I'll pass it back to.
Thank you. I will invite nominations for the appointments committee. Raise your hand and I'll invite you. You can also self-nominate. Did I see someone raise their hand? Felt like it went down super fast. Oh, Councillor Bauman?
Yeah, sure. I'll nominate myself for the committee.
Great. Councillor Papp?
I'd like to nominate myself as well.
Great. Councillor Jacob?
I would also like to nominate myself.
And Councillor Ross.
I would like to nominate Councillor Kersinger.
I see. Jason, is there a limit to how many people can be on this committee?
Yeah, there's 4 spots.
Right, it looks like we're gearing up for an election. 1 second. Gotta write this down now. All right, so we have, Hat, Bauman, who was the third person? Pat Bauman, 3 people who self-nominated.
Oh, me, Councillor Jacob.
Jacob, thank you. And then Kersinger. Are there any other nominations? Second call for nominations. third and final call for nominations. All right. Councillor Kurzinger, do you accept your nomination?
I do accept my nomination.
Great. Okay. That is four spots, four people. Congratulations to those four people. We don't need to have a motion to approve them. What's wrong? It wasn't an election. A little sad. Come on, guys. It's a bit spicy in here. All right. We'll move on to our new business. On the table for new business, we have some ad hoc committee proposals, and I will turn it off to our executive to share those proposals with us.
Okay, thank you. I will start off first with our proposal for the anti-racism and anti-oppression ad hoc committee. And so the proposal was included in your packages, but I will just be doing an overview of some of the highlights and contents of the specific proposal. So a bit of background information on this committee is that in 2021 winter term, the anti-racism MOU was signed by the previous USSU execs and the University of Saskatchewan as well. And one of the critical commitments included for the USSU to actively promote anti-racism and anti-oppression through various initiatives, including committees. And currently I sit on the USASC Anti-Racism and Anti-Oppression Committee, as well as their subcommittee. And additionally, as most of you know, at the USSU, we follow our strategic goals of Path Forward, and this committee would be included under our strategic goals of revitalizing community and to decolonize systems as well. And in terms of the mandates, I believe this committee would help to create a space for students with marginalized identities to focus on anti-racism and anti-oppression related topics on campus. Members will also make recommendations for the executives to take any actions on current issues on campus. And additionally, this committee would work with campus organizations and student groups to create a collective awareness on these issues. And lastly, the committee would review applications for the anti-racism and anti-oppression new grant that we're finalizing, and the recommendations for, the committee would review applications for the grant, and they would make recommendations to the campus groups committee regarding the grant as well. And so the composition that I believe would be great for this one was, I believe there is a typo on the proposal. Sorry about that. The composition would have been the president as sitting as the chair. And in terms of the non-voting members, it would be the communications and marketing manager, Jason, right there, and three members of student council, and five student at large members. And we would meet around three times each semester. And then additionally, in terms of some of the initial discussion topics that I would believe the committee would pursue, would be discussing the challenges around campus services and policies, promoting Black, Indigenous, and people of color focused mental health resources, and also updates to USSC policies to encompass anti-racism and anti-oppression values as well. So that's my overview of the anti-racism and anti-oppression ad hoc committee. I will pass it to Nicole for the first year students ad hoc committee.
I think we'll pause for questions first about this committee. Just questions, not debate. Very clear on this one. Does anyone have questions for President MJC? All right, Nicole.
Thank you, Chair. So the next one is the first year students ad hoc committee. And
this year, our insight is that we have two first years, essentially. So we have the first years that are coming to campus, but we also have the second years that couldn't go to campus. So that's kind of the background. And yeah, it's really a committee to share a space and representation and leadership for those first years. For example, we are having a first year that is totally new for engineering. So that will be really great that we have some participation and student experience on their side in their academics and also supporting them. And the composition of these will be me sharing it and also having an unmoting member from the management side, 3 members of the student council and 5 students at large members. And yes, clarifying that this is also part of our goals for the path forward to facilitate leadership for first year students. Yeah, I will pass it again to the chair.
Can you hear me? Okay, for some reason it's not letting me unmute from the top. So does anyone have any questions about that ad hoc committee proposal? Okay, seeing none, Abhinit.
Excuse me, I did have a question.
Oh, my thing is glitching. It's not showing me anyone's hands or anything. Go ahead, I am experiencing a lot of glitches. I'm gonna stop sharing and see if that helps.
All right, thank you, Madam Speaker. This actually kind of applies widely to all these ad hoc committees, and I understand they are ad hoc, these, so you might not have an answer for this, but what kind of time commitments would these ad hoc committees require, or is that too early to ask that question?
I can answer that quite, and Nicole too. But I would say that it is about when we form these committees and how regularly the committees would want to meet. Right now, since they are in the initial stages, we have put for the two committees that we just discussed, 3 meetings per term, just to begin. And then we'll kind of feel it out and depending on how the members want to go forward with them as well.
Sorry, Lee, I think that you are.
Was I muted?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Was there any other questions? I can't tell because I can't see anyone's names or if they're muted or like anything. So I can't see if you've raised your hand on the icon. I can't even see the chat right now. It is.
I have a question for the president.
Go ahead.
Madam President, I remember in your election platform, you mentioned some sort of committee for either violence against women. Can you correct me if I'm wrong or if I'm moving in the right direction?
Yeah, it was the idea for a safe campus committee.
I was wondering if that would be being proposed sometime soon as well.
So since this is called an anti-racism and anti-oppression committee, those were, it would be essentially like an umbrella committee to talk about identity-based oppression. So essentially this could be included in this and the anti-racism and anti-oppression committee.
Thank you very much.
I can go next if there's no questions. Like, yeah. Okay. So the next committee, which I'm proposing, is Student and the City of Saskatoon Connection Committee. So there is a very huge gap between the City of Saskatoon and students. So there is no connection with the projects or ongoing initiative which city is doing. So this committee will bring the university students, like the university administration, the university students, and the City of Saskatoon, like the directors and the other people who are involved in the projects. So yeah, this committee will be mostly involved for communication, delivering valuable information, and having debates and discussion on ongoing projects. This some of the examples that could come to this committee might be transit projects, sustainability and environment projects, strategic implementation planning, water conservation, active transportation, indigenous initiative, large capital projects like downtown arena, neighboring projects around university, safety on campus, sports and rec with the city, transportation around the university and on the city. So major all the concerns which students are having with the city. So all the projects will be involving on that. The committee members will be the Vice President Operation and Finance as the chair for this year. One student at large for representing international students and one student at large representing indigenous students. Three AOCP members, three counselors, two student at large. One person will be from the City of Saskatoon who will be representing and bringing on the people, directors and other managers from the city. Two person from the university administration. One person will be Patty McDougall that came to our committee today. And the other potential person is Dr. Arini, the Vice President Academics for University. So yeah. Do you guys have any questions around these things? Yeah, and the timeline for this thing, it may vary depending on the projects and what students really want to be getting engaged. So city will be bringing in the projects where they want suggestions from students, and it will depend on the committee how much how frequent they want to meet. So my proposal is like one meeting per month and having subdivision and sub discussions on that committee. Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Back to the chair. Okay, like I will just, okay. Do you guys have any questions for me?
No. Could I make a request to do a hold on this discussion because we're having really bad technical difficulties at the moment, and Leah can't unmute.
Madam President, if I could have the floor for a moment. Oh, there we go.
Okay, I am going to ask Jason if I can be an interim chair for the duration of the meeting until
Just going to say that because you are technically the chair, you give chair duties to Leah, so you can be the chair for the remainder of the meeting.
Okay. All right. Do I need to make a motion or anything like that?
No, you can take it over.
Okay. I will be taking over as chair and until Leah gets her equipment sorted. Yes, so the floor is open to questions at the moment. Councillor Kurzinger, go ahead.
No, thank you. Now that we have our situation sorted out in terms of carrying the discussion forward, that's all I had a point about. So please, if anyone else has a question, I digress.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, so anyone else with questions? About the committee that the ad hoc committee that was presented. I'm seeing none, so I'm going to ask the one of the execs to make a motion for the ad hoc committee. Since I am the chair, I can no longer make that motion. So Abhinit, do you want to state the motion and include the titles of the three ad hoc committees in your motion, please?
Yeah, so I would like to put forward a motion for three committees. The first one is Anti-Racism and Anti-Oppression Ad Hoc Committee. The second committee is First Year Students Ad Hoc Committee. And the third one is the Student and the City of Saskatoon Connection Committee, Connection Ad Hoc Committee, yeah.
Okay, could I get a seconder for this motion? Okay, seconded by VP Sains. And now I will open up the floor to any comments or any questions or concerns from the floor. Specifically, I would like to make note that if needed, we can table this discussion and come to a vote next meeting, or we can move forward with the votes. But I would want to hear how the councillors want to proceed with this motion. So I'm asking if there are any debates or any amendments that councillors are seeking at this time. Okay, so I am going to move to a vote. All in favor of the motion raised, please raise your hands.
Sorry, there was someone with a question before.
Sorry, okay, before we move to the vote, I apologize, I did not see the hand. Go ahead with your question, Councillor Chakdar.
I had just one, I would say suggestions or about the Student and City of Saskatoon Ad Hoc Committee. My question is to Abhinit. I think you mentioned that only one international student will be in the committee representing all the international students. I'm just wondering if there can be any possibility of increasing the number of students representing.
Okay, Councillor Abhinit, I'm sorry, Councillor Gosam, VP Goswami, I apologize, go ahead.
No worries, I was like a lot of time, 2 years councillors, okay. We have reserved one seat for international students and one seat for indigenous students. It doesn't mean that all the like more international students or indigenous students cannot be participating. It's just the reserve seat actually, yeah. And I just, I think missed the point that there's also two non-voting seat for GSA, like Graduate Association, yeah. So just to clarify that those seats are reserved, but there is no restriction that more students can be a part of that thing, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Awesome, thank you. Okay, any other questions on the floor? Okay, I am seeing none this time for sure. So I am going to once again move to a vote on this motion. Please raise your hands if you vote in favor. Okay, so, all right, anyone opposed? You may lower your hands if you've voted in favor. Anyone opposed? Okay, so then the motion carries. So the three ad hoc committees have been struck. Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to, I'm going to pull up the slides as well. Please give me a second so I can share the screen. Okay, so I'm just gonna leave that there. And then in terms of the, so we are moving on to the next item on the agenda, which was just a discussion about elections for all other committees. So at this time, since we have struck three ad hoc committees, we will include this and we will include these and the other nine official committees. And I believe Dallas has sent over the descriptions of all the committees, and you can also check them out on our website. And at this time, I will pass over the chair duties to Leah, because I believe everything's working now.
I think so. Yeah, it is. Can you guys hear me? Ah, nice. Still can't see your names, but that's all right. I should know them by now anyways. Did you stop sharing, Tez?
Yes.
So for the elections of all other committees, I believe there was a motion for this, was there not? From you, Tez? To push it to next week?
I don't believe we would need a motion for that.
Something else. A little lost here, because that's what I thought we were doing for that.
It's just that we would discuss it in the next one.
All right. Very rare that I don't know what to do, but I think we'll move on from this agenda item because there's nothing really to discuss. We're going to discuss it next week. That's that. I don't know how to like phrase that in a diplomatic way. So the last thing on the agenda is just question, comments, and announcements. Raise your hand visually because I still can't see that. All right, Nicole.
Thank you, Chair Leah. Just wanted to announce that we are having next week our new week about diversity. It's called EDI Week, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Week, where it aims for accessibility and diversity and inclusion. So please stay tuned. We will be launching some ads in our social media.
Great. You go ahead.
Just a reminder for counselors from the College of Arts and Science to make sure to come to our meetings, because we had one already and we couldn't find our other two counselors. So just make sure to come to our meetings.
What college is that?
Arts and Science.
It happens. All right. Counselor Bauman, is your hand up?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Visually, yes.
You moved on the screen, so that was my clue.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. So question for any of the executive, I guess. For us MSCs here, encouraging our constituencies, if we get to elect a second or a third MSC, are there resources or information or advice we should give to our constituencies who are hosting these elections for the by-election?
Jason?
Yeah, if you need any help, you can email me. I can walk them through PAWS and the elections, getting the PAWS announcement out to just your college, that type of thing. So if you need any help, reach out to me and I can help them along the way.
Thank you.
You bet.
All right. Any other questions? Just get my attention or move on the screen. All right, so now we'll go to adjournment. And I just need, since it's the end of the agenda, we just need a motion. I think I saw Abney. That's it. Abney moves to adjourn. That's great. All right, everyone have a good night. Go watch the rest of the debate. They're talking about reconciliation right now. I've been getting live updates, so. Have a good night.